This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans? Or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for conversation with an acclaimed jazz saxophonist, a staged reading of a play by an Academy Award-winning screenwriter addressing the issue of marriage equality, or an artistic journey with three sisters from down the bayou. It's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Donald Harrison Jr. is a man of many talents and interest. Count saxophonist, composer, Mardi Gras Indian chief, band leader, jazz educator, and key consultant for the HBO series Tremé, among them. Harrison recently sat down with WWNO's Fred Kasten for a Talkin' Jazz interview at the old U.S. Mint and talked about some of his earliest and most profound influences, musically and otherwise.
Donald Harrison Jr. grew up in 1960s New Orleans in a home full of
music and dancing and just New Orleans and I guess the world culture. My father was a big chief, so that I've known that my whole life, and he loved the parades, everything to do with second lighting, so he took me to a lot of those events my whole life. And then my mother liked all manner of things from Broadway to the musicals, which were popular in the movies at the time. Mm-hmm. And so she would take us to see all of those things. If a play came to town, we were there, to the museum. And you know, my father had a very extensive collection. I remember listening to Pygmy Chants when I heard Watermelon Man by Herbie Hancock. I had already heard it on the Pygmy sessions. I was like, "Oh, that's the yeah, that's what we were listening to." I was like, "They're not singing the rest of it. Where's the rest of it?" So I was already familiar with so much music: Ravi Shankar, the Beatles, Etta James, Bach, just everything you can imagine. It's a mishmash. But one of the great things is that my mother used to make us dance the popular dances. So some kind of way that got into my psyche that you should also play music. When I started to play, that makes you want to dance.
You have a clear memory of your first encounter with Mardi Gras Indians?
Yeah, when I was two, I remember it. I really do. I remember them running and going fast up and down, and feathers flying and singing. I really remember that. That was the first time I put on a suit, was at 2 years old, with the Creole Wild West. I was the little chief of the Creole Wild West, so I had on a dark blue and white suit my father made for me.
The Harrison household was also packed with books, and Donald developed a wide-ranging intellectual curiosity.
I don't know why I did it, but I was always interested in the encyclopedia. So I guess I was around 13 when I had read the whole encyclopedia. And so when I started traveling, I was, "Oh, that's a flying buttress on the church there." So it's just, you know, just a wealth of information, I guess. All types of information was there.
Donald Harrison Jr. also evidenced very early musical talent and interest.
My mother speaks of me playing drums on the crib, and that they should have got me a drum set instead of a saxophone, because I think I have a natural affinity for rhythm. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like I can remember what they were playing on the drums in the '60s. I can remember, okay, this guy played it like this. And this guy played it. I mean, it's just like a vivid memory of how each person, he played with the singers, he did this, and this guy was playing on the walls. So from a small child, I can remember rhythms.
Harrison was around 10 when he got his first alto sax.
I had no clue that I was going to be a saxophonist, but my father did. And it just hit him. I guess he was passing Werlein's and he saw the saxophone in the window. I was in elementary school and he purchased it and brought it home to me. And I looked at it and I said, oh, that's cool. Kept going about my business. But then I picked it up and played briefly and stuck it in the closet. And he would always remind me, you know, you have a saxophone in the closet. I was like, yeah, okay. And I heard Mr. Magic by Grover Washington. And that's what sort of spurred me to pick it up. Started to figure out how the song was put together. I said, oh, this is fun. And I just kept going after that.
Grover Washington fairly quickly led Donald Harrison to Charlie Parker and the other masters of bebop.
How I got into Charlie Parker, even though I'd heard him all my life, but he didn't have a hit at the time. So, but my fault, I was bragging, saying, I know Mr. Magic by Grover Washington. I thought my father was going to pat me on the back and say, great. He said, yeah, well, check out this guy. Go listen, go get this for me. And he gave me Charlie Parker, and I started scratching my head. Then I was like, oh, this is hard stuff. Got an immediate respect for the music they call bebop, and that's when I was trying to learn that music, decided I wanted to learn as much as possible about bebop and the whole history of jazz music.
Harrison started woodshedding at home, took lessons with Kid Jordan, joined Doc Pollen's brass band, then after high school, studied at the Berklee School of Music in Boston for a couple of years. When he was 19, he joined the band of Jazz Hall of Fame drummer Roy Haynes.
Great thing about truly brilliant musicians is they never stop growing. He's one of those guys who every day it's going to be fresh. It's phenomenal to be around those. I was around Roy for 15 years, and he just taught me so much. He would tell me, oh, you know, when we play with Bird, it's not on record, but this is the bridge we played to this song. Just giving me so much information and. Mm-hmm. Relaxing, and I'm so thankful I was around him so long.
In addition to Roy Haynes, Donald Harrison Jr. has worked with a who's who of jazz greats, and for more than 20 years now has led his own outstanding ensembles. He is, in his turn, passing on the legacy that has so enriched his life. As a mentor to the top-notch 20-somethings in his current working band, drummer Joe Dyson, bassist Max Moran, keyboardist Conan Pappas, and as the leader of several jazz education programs in New Orleans. For 89.9 WWNO, I'm Fred Kasten.
Donald Harrison Jr. plays Jazz Fest with his band Friday, April 26th, and as part of a Sidney Bechet tribute Saturday, April 27th, when he's also set to sit in with the Eddie Palmieri Salsa Orchestra. Today's interview was made possible in part thanks to support from the New Orleans Jazz National Historical Park, which presents the monthly Talkin' Jazz with Fred Kasten interview series at the Old U.S. Mint. The series continues with Fred's interview of saxophonist and composer Tony DeGrotti this Friday afternoon at 2. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack.
We put fear and prejudice on trial.
We put fear and prejudice on trial.
We put fear and prejudice on trial.
The word marriage has a meaning. If it wasn't so important, we wouldn't be here today.
Academy Award-winning screenwriter Dustin Lance Black, known for the movies Milk, J. Edgar, and now 8, the play, will be in New Orleans next week for the staged reading of his latest work, which portrays events in the initial trial which led to the overturn of California's Proposition 8, a bill preventing same-sex marriage. 8 is being produced by Southern Rep Theater and the Forum for Equality in New Orleans. Joining me in the studio now is Southern Rep Theater's Artistic Director, Aimé Hayes, and local actress, Kerry Cahill. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Diane.
Yeah, great. Thanks for having us.
Tell me, how did Southern Rep and the Forum for Equality partner in this production of 8 the Play?
8 the Play has been produced as a reading, as a staged reading, all over America. And last year, I guess in August, the American Foundation for Equal Rights and Broadway Impact, which is a collaboration that Dustin Lance Black put together to have this play done, contacted me at Southern Rep and said, we would love to have this play happen in New Orleans. Can you make that happen for us? And I said, absolutely. I think this is an important conversation for a community to have. And I reached out to Forum for Equality to see if they would want to partner, and they did. And we've had a really fruitful coming together to make this play happen.
Now, the subject of same-sex marriage continues to be a hot-button issue across the nation, with the Supreme Court expected to weigh in any time now on California's Proposition 8. How does this work broaden the audience's understanding of the issue?
When this case went to trial, Perry versus Schwarzenegger, they made a motion that the contents of the trial would not be broadcast. And when Dustin Lance Black won his Academy Award for Milk, he made a promise from the stage that he would do all that he could to promote conversations about support of gay marriage. So what he did is he took the trial transcript, which is actually quite humorous, very dramatic. It's sort of 12 angry men, if you will, happening in the case. And he took the transcripts that were not allowed to be broadcast and put it into the play. So when you see the play, you're actually hearing the testimony from the plaintiffs, the heartfelt stories of couples who are seeking marriage and trying to raise their families in peace. And you also hear the opposite side as well. So it's a very stirring staged reading that recreates what happened in the court.
Now, Kerry, you are one of the actors in this production.
There's how many of it? There's 22.
There's 22 of them.
Yes.
It's a huge play.
Huge cast. So it's going to be really fun to share the stage with that many wonderful people.
Can you tell us about your character?
My character is Maggie Gallagher, and she is the co-founder for the National Organization for Marriage. She was the former chairman of the board as well, I believe, when this trial was happening. I'm in the process of researching her. And she is opposed to gay marriage and very much supports upholding Proposition 8. So it's very interesting to play someone that I do not look like and don't always think like either. And so that's been an interesting process of how to play her.
What challenges did you encounter in this production?
You want to make sure that you don't judge your character. It's the thing a lot of famous actors always say in interviews. You want to give them the chance to go, okay, who is this person? What do they think? And so that's a challenge because I don't agree with her on everything and how to find an in of where she's coming from so that it doesn't make her look like a villain, because she doesn't think she's a villain. And other people think she is, and some people don't. Some people think she's a hero. And so you have to allow for all of those opinions to express themselves.
And it was important for you to be a part of this production because?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I am a big supporter of equality in terms of all things. And I'm also a big supporter in terms of discussions and conversations. But that's one of the things that I really like about this piece, is that it helps to inform the public, to tell them what happened in that original case with Judge Walker, where he did overturn Proposition 8, what was said, what really happened. And so now we get to be more informed on our discussion, and then we get to have a time where we have a talk back, where we all get listened to, and we all get to have a discussion where there's respect happening as well as opinions of differing backgrounds as well.
And we will have Dustin Lance Black at the talkback, which is an incredible thing. He does not fly around the country doing press for this play, but since his mother was actually born in New Orleans and was raised here, he has family roots here. The city means a lot to him. So being here to be a part of this process in New Orleans is an incredible thing for us, and we're just glad to welcome him back home. Also, we have an incredible cast of actors from Michael Arata to Dane Rhodes to Leon Condivespri, Natalie Boyd, a whole bunch of folks from Running with Scissors. So it's this great mashup of talent in New Orleans, and I think that makes it an exciting evening, too.
So when and where does the reading take place?
The reading takes place at the Civic Theater on Sunday, April 21st at 7 p.m. There's also a cocktail party with Dustin Lance Black, which all the proceeds go to support Forum for Equality and all of our partners with this production.
Amy, thank you. And Carrie, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Southern Rep Theater's artistic director, Amy Hayes, and local actress, Carrie Cahill.
Goodbye, Joe. We gotta go. We don't mind. We gotta go. Call the hero down. Goodbye. My boy. We won, we'll mire. Son of a gun, we'll have good fun. Or goodbye.
Can you imagine three siblings, sisters, all having a knack for the creative arts, but coming into their own talents at different stages in their lives? Well, so begins the story of three Fleming sisters of Lafitte, now the subject of an exhibition of the same name at the Reynolds Ryan Art Gallery at Isidore Newman School. Newman's Dean of the Arts, Paul Tynes.
I think for our community, the gift that the Fleming sisters have given us for kids to dream, for kids to think outside the box, it's a coming home.
And Newman's Reynolds Ryan Art Gallery Director, Catherine Scurlock, adds,
the ladies have been wonderfully generous with their time with students all the way from pre-K to high school, doing walkthroughs and talking about their work and sharing with them different technique and ideas.
It's a full circle moment for the Fleming sisters, Priscilla, Valerie, and Avis, who attended the Newman School back in the 50s to return some 60 years later to the place where their love of art was first nurtured. Scurlock says,
Avis has been an artist for quite some time now. She's a well-established artist up in the Virginia area. And then Priscilla is, I would say, probably more mid-career with her artwork, more recently showing her work publicly. And Valerie, as it turns out, is an emerging artist.
We caught up with two of the Fleming sisters who live in New Orleans, Priscilla, now 80, and Valerie in her late 70s, both full of energy and excited about their art. We took a trek down memory lane as they recounted their early years growing up in the Bayou Barataria, Jean Lafitte area, and traveling 1 hour to school each day in New Orleans.
Well, this is Priscilla, and we grew up in Lafitte, a little bayou community. Our family came down from New England in the north, so they weren't originally from Louisiana. And we went to the little school down there, Fisher Number 1, and walked along the road because we were within the one-mile limit. If you lived a mile out, you got to take the bus. And so the four of us, we would walk down the road to school, and it just went through seventh grade. So the big thing was, after seventh grade, did you go to Gretna? Did you go to Marrero? And my mother said, no, she wanted us to go to New Orleans. And so the story is that the head of the school at Newman was a friend of my grandfather's, and so our parents went and talked to Mr. Henson, and next thing we knew, I was in the eighth grade, living in town, as they say, and with my godparents. And then the next 4 years, I drove, and then Valerie took over her senior year, and then Avis had 3 years on her own of driving. So we spent a lot of time on the road.
Valerie, yes. On a good day, we could make it in 55 minutes. We were supposed to leave home at 7:15 every morning. I don't think we ever left home at 7:15, but that's what we were supposed to do. And I remember one time getting to Newman so early because everything went right. The bridge was closed. The ferry was coming toward us. There were no trains on the railroad track. And the only person we saw was the janitor who was finishing cleaning up. So then we had to wait for other people to arrive.
Priscilla's creative outlets early on were writing and photography.
She turned to painting after the loss of a child to cystic fibrosis at the suggestion of a friend.
A friend who was a painter said, you know, photography is okay. What you need to do is get some oils and get some canvas and start throwing some color around and you'll feel better. So I didn't really start an art education until I was in my 30s and studied with Chalice Calandria. When I was a freshman, I had some art history kind of courses at Newcomb, but the real painting didn't come until I was, I guess I was 32. And then it's never stopped. Here I am, 80, and I'm still painting.
Priscilla has a passion for color, and she loves painting with acrylics, landscapes, beach scenes, and gardens. Valerie, now retired from a 25-year psychology practice, which she entered in her 40s, has just recently discovered her talent as a fiber artist.
I went to a class on silk painting, and I loved that. I learned how to paint on silk, and then I just started going to various workshops by fiber artists, and that was it.
Her works, photo collages printed on fabric, feature family.
Yes, it's such a convenient and close-by subject matter.
Valerie incorporates the family home, mom, dad, siblings, and grandchildren in her work. She also pays homage to jazz musicians Thelonious Monk and Louis Armstrong. The three Fleming sisters of Lafitte, Priscilla Fleming Veda, Valerie Fleming Turgeon, and Avis Fleming, continue to touch lives through art in the community that first nurtured their artistic abilities. Their latest exhibit, Three Fleming Sisters of Lafitte, is on view at the Reynolds Ryan Art Gallery at Isidore Newman School, weekdays from 9 to 4 through May 2nd. We have something extra in our Lanyap Corner. Trombone Shorty and Orleans Avenue will headline Shorty Fest, a concert for New Orleans musician Troy Andrews' Trombone Shorty Foundation. Dirty Dozen Brass Band, Chawa, and Hot Eight Brass Band also will perform. There will be a special presentation by students from the Foundation's music education program, the Trombone Shorty Academy. May 2nd at Generations Hall, 310 Andrew Higgins Drive. Doors open at 8 p.m., concert at 9. More info at tromboneshortyfoundation.org. That's our show for this week. Inside the Arts is a production of WWNO. Our program is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette next Tuesday at 1 p.m. when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.